How will the latest bipartisan deal in Washington on health care affect those without insurance here on the First Coast and Florida? A closer look as we speak with a healthcare CEO just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through our WJCT app. Just ahead, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators has come up with a compromise on health insurance. How will it affect those with insurance and without? What are your questions? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, what we can do to bring more civility to our political discourse. Yes, it might actually be possible. We'll at least try. Plus, there's a new computer attack that could infest your Wi-Fi system. We'll tell you about it and ways to combat the hack. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, the latest on healthcare for you. Two senators reached a bipartisan deal late Tuesday to fund critical subsidies to the nation's insurers. Now, this is a move that will hopefully stabilize teetering health insurance markets under the Affordable Care Act. President Trump has voiced support for the plan from Senators Lamar Alexander, Republican of Tennessee, and Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington. Now, what it would do is fund the subsidies for 2 years. This is a step that would provide at least some short-term certainty to insurers, companies like Aetna and Florida Blue. The subsidies, known as cost-sharing reduction payments, reimburse the insurance companies for lowering deductibles, co-payments, and other out-of-pocket costs for low-income customers. Essentially, they widen insurance accessibility for more low-income Americans. So will this deal make it into law? Will Congress pass it? And what does this mean for your insurance here in Florida? Right now, we welcome an expert. She's Mia Jones, CEO of Agape Community Health Center here in Jacksonville and former member of the Florida House. Mia, thanks for joining us this morning.
Melissa, thanks so much for having me.
And to our callers, what are your thoughts about this bipartisan deal on stabilizing the nation's health insurance markets? What are your questions about your insurance? The line to join the show, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on Facebook. And so, Mia Jones, the president appears to be backing this deal from Republican Senator Alexander and Democratic Senator Murray, even though just last week he had declared these cost-sharing payments dead and said he was getting rid of them. What these senators are saying is, let's keep paying them for 2 years. Do you think this is a good idea, a good plan?
I think it's critical. When we look at the Affordable Care Act and all the people who were able to get coverage and the marketplace and how the marketplace was set up, it created for the providers, the insurance companies, the opportunity to know that not only when the people signed up that they would be customers for them, but that they would get paid for providing that service. Mm-hmm. And so when you are able to know that that bill is being paid versus the instability that had previously existed with us having so many people, millions of people across the country who were uninsured, we recognize that that was a component of the Affordable Care Act that was critical. And so I'm glad to hear that President Trump is supporting this bipartisan effort. We look forward to this being able to be passed. And what I think we will find is that more and more people will be able to get the help that they need.
That's the goal for everyone, of course. Now, just the other day on this program, Pat Garrity, the CEO of Florida Blue, the biggest insurer in Florida, he said that without some sort of fix, his customers' premiums would spike by double digits in 2018. With this legislative fix, what they're hoping is that rates will stabilize. But still, it's estimated that premiums could go up in 2018 in many parts of the country by double digits. Anyway, what about Florida? Do we have any information on how this might affect customers' insurance premiums here in Florida?
I think Pat's analogy of what the impact would be for him and for his organization really gives us a true picture of Florida because of their size and the number of insurers that they have. And so being able to make sure that they have the coverage that they need, being able to make sure that that subsidy is there, as a payer, he knows that helps to stabilize his bottom line, and it will make the difference.
Tell us a little bit about Agape Community Health Center and your role in all of this.
Sure. Agape Community Health Center is a federally qualified health center here in Jacksonville. We have 5 locations, and as a federally qualified health center, we provide health care for insured, uninsured, and underinsured. And so those who carry those catastrophic policies are what we call the underinsured. And we do primary care and then refer out for specialty care. And so the impact of the Affordable Care Act is something that I'm watching every single day to see what's happening and to evaluate what the impact will be for us and for our patients.
It's 549-2937. What are your thoughts about this ever-moving landscape on what's going to be done about health insurance in this country? 549-2937, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. For me, Mia Jones, CEO of Agape and former member of the Florida House. So how will this affect your patient population then? If this measure gets its way through Congress, which is still a big if, by the way.
It is. It is. We are dealing with an uncertain landscape when we're talking about our congressional body. And so hopefully everyone can put aside the partisanship and say this is really a good approach to us being able to make sure that Americans have the coverage that they need and that we are doing what we need to do in order to stabilize the industry.
That's the key point that everybody wants. Republicans, Democrats, insurance companies, organizations like Agape, this uncertainty and this fear about wild price spikes is not good for the nation's healthcare sector. It's not good for the country overall.
Correct. When you start to look at and you put yourself in the place of the insurance company and they don't know what the landscape is going to be, when you've got bills flying around, executive orders flying around, you've got to make some decisions. And because of that uncertainty, then, of course, prices are going to rise because you recognize that if you take away the subsidies, more and more of those people who you have insured. And just here in Duval County, we had 54,000 who were insured under the Affordable Care Act. I don't have the number in front of me of how many of those had the subsidies, but a large number of them did. And so if all of a sudden a large portion of those that you're insuring lose a significant chunk of that payment, you've got to do something. And so how do you recoup those dollars in order to continue to provide the services that you're providing?
What would Agape what will Agape do if this deal is not approved and passed into law? What will you do to cover your patient population?
We're going to be in a very difficult situation. We will have to come to the community for additional funding because as a federally qualified health center, we can't turn anyone away. And so when you say all of a sudden we're going to increase the number of uninsured in Duval County, when they lose that insurance, they come to us or they go to our emergency rooms. And so it's either pay the cost for them to come to us or pay the greater cost for them to go to our emergency rooms. And so we have a responsibility as a community to be wise stewards of our dollars. And so we would be wanting to pay it on the front end. Let them come to an organization that's in place to provide that preventative care, that primary care for them, and then do our best to cut down on so many people going to our emergency rooms.
What are your questions for Mia Jones, CEO of Agape Community Healthcare, providing primary care to uninsured and underinsured local residents? Former member of the Florida House, as we discuss this bipartisan deal in the Senate that could stabilize the nation's teetering insurance markets and keep people covered under what are known as cost-sharing reduction agreements. It's a complicated insurance mechanism, but what it does basically is it keeps low-income people covered as the president and Congress work through whatever the future will be in this country for healthcare insurance. What are your questions? 549-2937. Let's find out from everyone listening. What's your insurance situation? Let us know your stories out there. Robert is in St. Augustine. Hi, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to kind of give you a quick overview of how this the elimination of the federal subsidy would affect me as a working person. I would say in the general population of the working class. I'm in construction right now. The cost of my insurance for what I consider to be decent coverage is around $85 a month with the subsidy. Without the subsidy, my cost jumps to almost $700 a month. Now, if you look at that as a cost, as a percentage of my net income, we're looking at close to 25-30% of my net income. My concern and my question to everyone who would support the movement out there towards eliminating the Health Care Act is, how does this benefit them? How does this kind of, because I know I'm not the only one. And so in regards to your guest this morning, how are they going to address the masses of people that are out there in my situation who are going to need their help? Thanks. I'll take
Thank you, Robert. There. Thanks. That's Robert down in St. Augustine. Mia Jones.
Yes. When we start to talk about Robert, thank you so much for calling in. Your story is one that we hear quite often, and we recognize that this is impactful on families. And so you are a prime example of why we feel that this bipartisan effort is something that definitely needs to pass, that the retaining and making sure that we retain the subsidies is something that is critical, because our working citizens, they just can't afford it. We knew that on the front end. That's why the Affordable Care Act was so important. So not only people who are not working don't have coverage, but we know that, just like Robert said, he goes to work every day. He has responsibilities, and to take 25 or 30% of his net income to pay for insurance is just going to be a major impact and a major hit on the responsibilities that he has. And so I think as a community, we have to let our delegation members know that this is a great opportunity for them to support you and you just simply being able to take care of yourself and your family.
Now, full disclosure, you're a former Democratic member of the Florida House, yes, hailing from Jacksonville. You obviously supported the Affordable Care Act. For those that didn't, and for those that supported the president's move to end these cost-sharing reduction payments to insurers, he since reversed himself. Now he's saying he's in favor of this bipartisan deal to sort of salvage them. The reason Congress was so, or the House rather, was so opposed to them was because they felt that the cost was prohibitive and that President Obama had not gone through the proper legislative process to authorize them. So what about that point of view?
When you look at all of those things, the devil is in the detail. We know that this bill was thousands of pages. And so when you start to dig down into it, we know that a whole lot of time has gone into it, effort has gone into it. The bipartisan Budget Review Committee, they look at it. And so recognizing that responsibilities are there and no solution is perfect, there is going to be something that needs to be addressed, tweaked. And so it would be a better situation for us to tweak something that may not have been perfect versus to totally get rid of it. And so I think that's what this bipartisan effort allows for, is that rather than just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, let's keep the baby, let's clean the bathwater up, and let's work together to make sure that we're addressing whatever needs to be addressed.
549-2937. Share your insurance stories and questions with us. Kim in St. Augustine. Hello, Kim.
Hi. Can you tell me, do you think this will be decided before November 1st when open enrollment begins?
You know, that's a great question. And that came up the other day with Pat Garrity, CEO of Florida Blue. And I can't recall exactly what he said, Mia, but I think he seemed to indicate that it would not.
I don't think
it would not get passed
mm-hmm. before then. But I do think that the impact of the legislation will be for 2018 and moving forward.
549-2937. William is at JTB and Hodges. Hey, William. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. I used to be a patient at the Mayo Clinic, and one thing I found that was nice about the Mayo Clinic and the National Institute of Health is everything is on one campus. My primary doctor, my specialists, x-rays, blood work, everything's in one facility. Now I'm with a different hospital group, and I have to go to one location to see my primary doctor, another location for blood work, another location for chest x-ray. To me, I think it would be more efficient if everything was set up in one facility and then not having my insurance dictate where I have to physically travel to get the test that I need. And I'm wondering, why is it set up that way? I can take my question off the air.
Okay, William.
Thank you, William, for your call. Many of the organizations started out with a primary focus. And so if they started out with a primary focus of being a hospital and then they decided that they would create primary care medical offices, and so then they add that on, it wasn't a part of what they did in the beginning. And then you don't know what is going on in the background in terms of negotiations with contracts, in terms of being able to negotiate the contract for your x-rays and for your lab test and all of those things. And so if a organization is not a conglomerate and a diversified organization that maintains all of those things, then when the insurance company is doing their negotiations, they have to make sure that certain services are available to you. And so that's when you start having to go to multiple places in order to get what you need.
Dixie, Dixie in Riverside. Hello, Dixie.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a pharmacist. I volunteer at a free clinic for the working uninsured, volunteers in medicine. And if you need health care and you can't afford the insurance, do come and sign up to be a patient. And if you don't need the health care and you have lots of money, please send us some so that we can take care of people who don't have it.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for that. They've been frequent guests on this program as well. Volunteers in Medicine in downtown Jacksonville, their website, vim-jax.org. Thank you for that. There's also WeCare, I believe, another organization that helps the uninsured.
It is. Agape WeCare and Volunteers in Medicine, we work very closely together, recognizing that we share the same population. And being able to identify ways for us to provide a healthcare landscape that supports the needs of our uninsured and underinsured patients is something that we take very seriously, and that partnership between those three organizations is something that we take very seriously. And so, Dixie, thank you for volunteering with them, and thank you for your service. We work very hard to close the gaps in funding for our organizations, and being able to do that fundraising is something that we have to find ways to do.
Lots of emails, tweets, lots of social media comments. Let's get to just a few. Rob emails the show, "This action by the president sets the course for Americans to be the only industrialized nation on earth where a working American citizen can get into an accident or come down with an illness and have to declare bankruptcy." Nick emails the show, "Why is it that only the latest sabotage of the ACA is being discussed? Where would premiums be if our governor had accepted the Medicaid expansion?" For Mia Jones, "Please speak to the status of SHIP reauthorization and what will happen to your patient population if that's not funded." That's the Children's Health Insurance Program. That's a national program. Here's another email. "The services that your guest organization provides are important and appreciated. It makes sense for people to get preventive and routine care outside of the ER. My question is, why is a trip to the emergency room so expensive?" Lots of questions there.
Lots of questions.
Let's begin with the ER question.
So when you talk about an emergency room, the hospital has to pay for all of the specialists and everyone to be on staff at all times. And so the cost of maintaining all of those people and all of that at one time, at all times, is pretty expensive. And so they don't know when you walk in the door, if you're going to need an EKG, if you're going to need a CAT scan, if you're going to need an MRI, or what your situation is going to be. If it's going to be a trauma situation, then that cost is multiplied. And so coming into an ER, that means that they have to be prepared for anything. And so that's why the cost is so high.
Adam tweets the show, how much are insurance companies passing along the reduction in cost-sharing payments to doctors and hospitals, or is this 100% a burden on the consumer?
I'm not sure about that. In terms of how much gets passed along to the doctors and the hospitals, I would say that a portion of it has to. Otherwise, the system wouldn't work. But what those numbers are, I don't have. One of your listeners asked about the CHIP program. I believe that the CHIP program will be reestablished and reinstated and maintained because everybody wants to protect our children. And so that's really a bipartisan effort that I've been assured from a number of both Republican and Democratic congressional delegation members that that will happen. It's just a matter of time and them getting the bill in place. And so we're looking forward to that. And the impact of CHIP not being refunded is...
And that just happened the other day in D.C.
Yes.
That taking health insurance away from, I think it was about 8 million children.
Yes.
And Congress may or may not reauthorize that program.
Yeah. As I've spoken with various congressional members, they have assured me that that will take place.
They plan to reauthorize it.
They believe that it will be reauthorized.
Okay.
Yes.
David on the South Side. Hi, David.
Hello, Melissa. This is a nice program, but I would like to have someone else on the program talking about the reason for the cuts, and that is the cuts need to be had in the health programs so the tax cuts for the wealthy can be had. The conservatives don't want to add to the budget, so they have to balance the budget by cutting health care to the children and the citizens. So whenever a politician is sitting out there talking about tax cuts, ask them what's going to happen to the children and the people that don't have health care, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You hit it dead on the head. If you don't create more revenue, you've got to cut somewhere. And by cutting the dollars, whether it's the marketing dollars for the Affordable Care Act, whether it's the subsidy funding, those cuts will then turn around and impact the ability for there to be tax cuts on the other end.
Carol in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Carol. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. I think y'all ought to clarify that people who get the subsidies where they call in and they get less, that those aren't the people going to be hurt by this cut he made. At least from what I understand, it's the people who don't get a subsidy that are going to be hurt, because the insurance rates are going to go up for them. But the government will be taken care of. At least if I understand, the government's going to be taken care of, paying more. So it'll those people that are poor aren't going to be hurt as much. It's going to be the people that have a higher income and
yeah.
have to pay the full cost.
I think that's right, Carol. I have seen some estimates to that effect that more broadly, middle-class Americans, particularly those that have been buying their own insurance, will see really high rate spikes if
right.
nothing is done.
Right. And the impact is going to hit us on all levels. And so as we start to look at those who don't get subsidies, when the rates go up, the rates go up. The rates go up across the board for everybody. And so for those who aren't getting subsidies, you're going to pay more. For those who are getting subsidies, they're going to pay more. And for those who simply qualify for Medicaid in their various states, then that is even going to be impacted because they're going to reduce the number of those people who are able to qualify for that as well. And so the impact of this is going to be global, and it's something that is real. And one of the things that I think is that the president heard that.
Speaking of which, one last tweet for you from Shauna. How do we fight for a bipartisan solution against this type of sabotage? Referring to, I think, the perception that President Trump has been intent on dismantling the Affordable Care Act from the outset.
I think that as a country, we have to stand up and say to our elected officials, enough is enough. All of the bickering and all of that, we have to do what's in the best interest of Americans across the board. And in doing that, we have to put aside the labels, and we have to just look at the facts. And we know that when you take the labels off and you say, you put yourself in that predicament, every single elected official, once you put their family in that predicament, all of a sudden they want to make sure that coverage is available. I can remember when we were trying to expand Medicaid in the Florida House and saying to the chairman of the committee, if you're okay with people not having insurance, then you give up insurance for you and your five kids and your wife. And then I'll say that it's not important to have. And never would they go that far to say that, okay, I'll give up my coverage. And so recognizing that my family is just like everybody else's family that's out there, we need insurance coverage. We know that things happen, but we also know that if a system is in place for preventative care, then we are in a much better situation.
Thanks for joining us with your thoughts on short notice this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mia Jones is CEO of Agape Community Healthcare, Inc. and former Democratic member of the Florida House. And much more still ahead later. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, speaking of healthcare, as we welcome Mayo Clinic and one oncologist who's also a breast cancer survivor. But up next, bringing more civility to our raucous political reality in these times, is it even possible? We'll take a closer look right after this.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today. Why doesn't education use innovation to grow like a successful business? Join WJCT for a screening and discussion about this question and others. Raised in School, Inc., A Personal Journey with Andrew Coulson. This event will be held on Thursday, October 19th at WJCT Studios, beginning with an opening reception at 5:30 p.m. The event is free, but RSVPs are requested and can be made at wjct.org/events.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we ask the tough questions and we take no guff, not even, from NPR's own Terry Gross.
Is there something that you love that would surprise people to know?
Oh, well, it might be opera, because I surprised myself to know I like it.
Nobody here is surprised to know that you like that. Don't be bringing that nonsense around here. We have plenty of our own. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR. Saturday and Sunday mornings on 89.9 WJCT.
Hey, Car Talk fans, if you're wondering why Click and Clack aren't here, NPR is no longer distributing the best of Car Talk. The good news is you can continue to listen to the podcasts of the program at cartalk.com. We hope you enjoy WJCT's new weekend schedule. For more information about the new programs, visit wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Last night, One Jackson UNF presented their latest program in a civil discourse project. The featured speaker, Dr. Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She's executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, a group that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. That may seem like an impossible task, but there's lots to discuss here. And we're pleased to welcome Dr. Carolyn Lukensmeyer to Studio 5. Good morning.
Thanks very much, Melissa. I'm delighted to be here.
delighted to have you. I heard you had a very good group last night and a good discussion.
Great turnout. People ask great questions. Americans are really upset about what's happened to our language in our politics and in our communities.
Absolutely. The political dialogue has become so coarsened, and I do think the broad center of Americans doesn't want that. And so your organization works to try to push back against that, correct?
Absolutely. And clearly, during the 2016 campaign is when this coarsening of political language really, really took a strong, degraded direction. Mm-hmm. And we began to get thousands of messages on social media and email from Americans, red stripes, blue stripes, purple stripes, really saying, you know, this has gone too far. We really cannot tolerate this kind of language in our communities.
Here is a tweet for you pointing out one example of that from Brian. We need to skip broad slurs of people we disagree with, like libs, rhinos. In a PBS special, neurologist David Eagleman said, just a one-word label can weaken an onlooker's sympathy. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. We've come to a place where people see each other as labels rather than seeing each other as people. We work a lot in state legislatures, and one of the projects we do is called Building Trust Through Civil Discourse. And that's what comes out of that work is, you know, liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans stop relating to each other through those labels and start working together again.
Here's another tweet from Ryan. How about we end open primaries with a runoff? That eliminates the need for gerrymandered districts. That's another facet of our polarization, which leads to this angry, rancorous political rhetoric.
There's no doubt about it. The way primaries operate, where only the party can vote in it, and usually it's only the party regulars and real base that vote. So it has driven candidates to take their positions much further than they actually feel and much further than the vast majority of Americans.
The most extreme candidates tend to win. Yeah. Now, the National Institute for Civil Discourse was established 6 years ago after the shooting in Tucson that killed six people, including former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords.
She was severely wounded in terms of brain damage. She is an amazing human being. She's come back to a level of recovery that most doctors said wasn't possible, given the part of her brain that was injured. But the Institute came about because people in Arizona loved Gabby. She had a record in the state legislature of really working across the aisle. And she took that legacy into Congress, where she started the women's softball team in the House, which was both Republicans and Democrats. So we follow in her footsteps around choosing to be completely nonpartisan, not political at all, but really bringing people together across the deep divides in the country.
And as the executive director of this institute, you are a thought leader in the field of deliberative democracy. What is deliberative democracy?
Well, it's a term most Americans wouldn't quickly relate to because it comes out of the academy. But the notion is, from our founding, democracy is really about a conversation. What do you think? What do I think? What do we collectively debate on these big issues like immigration, like tax reform? So the whole idea is bringing together ordinary people to have real decisions based on facts. That's another real problem in addition to the awful language that we're watching in our politics. We've come to a place where people really use facts only that buttress what they thought before we started the conversation. And that's a significant problem.
What are some other thoughts you have about how we can try to restore at least some civility to our politics?
Well, we stepped out even beginning last year with an initiative called Revive Civility. I hope all of your listeners will go to www.revivecivility.org, where we have posted a set of tools, materials, conversation guides. What we hear at the Institute, we hear from families, where a call recently was from a mother who said, our two daughters don't speak to each other since the election. We get calls from faith-based leaders, both Christian, Jewish, Muslim, saying our congregation is still divided. And frankly, Melissa, most surprising to me, we've actually gotten calls from major corporations saying that the productivity of some of their most important product innovation teams has not come back to the same level because of the trust that was broken during last year's campaign.
Wow, that's extraordinary. So coworkers can't work together as well anymore.
Exactly, which is why we've created these tools, these materials. And the critical piece is how to once again listen to one another to understand why we made the choices we made, rather than trying to talk each other out of our perspectives.
Restore civility. Google that if you're a company CEO, maybe, or just an interested citizen. Fascinating. And so good to speak with you. Thank you so much for giving us some time before you leave town. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Melissa. Thanks very much.
She's Dr. Carolyn Lukensmeyer, Executive Director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. And we'll be right back.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, some good medical news. Overall, breast cancer rates are declining. One theory is that this decrease is partially due to the reduced use of hormone replacement therapy for women. Still, about 1 in 8 U.S. women, 12% or so, will develop invasive breast cancer over the course of her life. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Dr. Dawn Mussalem is an oncologist with Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic, and she's also a breast cancer survivor. Dr. Mussalem, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. And you counsel patients on survivorship. The good news is more women are surviving and less women are getting breast cancer to begin with. And it's interesting to see a lot of that has to, or at least some of that has to do with less women going on HRT, hormone replacement therapy. Right?
Absolutely, Melissa. You know, the knowledge that hormone replacement therapy was increasing the risk of breast cancer was very important. We know that estrogen is a big driver for especially estrogen receptor positive breast cancers. And if there's a way for us to help women during menopause and try to avoid hormones, that's an important focus because we can prevent such cases.
Okay. Still, though, this year alone, more than 250,000 new cases being diagnosed in the U.S. And by the way, several thousand cases in men. So Mayo Clinic obviously is a leading healthcare provider in this country. And you as an oncologist, you counsel patients, you treat patients, but you also counsel them on survivorship. You yourself are a survivor. So you're particularly well positioned to do this.
You're right, Melissa, and I can't tell you how meaningful my career is to me for this very reason. Cancer was really a teacher of life. It provided me a gift that allowed me to realize the beautiful nature of life. But survivorship was so challenging. The treatment itself was easy. You're given the strength to get through treatment, but afterwards, everything goes away. And it's almost like the safety net falls. And so you stop and you think, what's next? What's this cough all about? Is it a virus? Is my cancer back? Or is this just something from the radiation I received? So what we do at Mayo Clinic at the Jacoby Center for Breast Health is we help survivors bridge that gap. We have a multidisciplinary, comprehensive survivorship program that does exactly that. We provide every patient with a written, detailed overview of all the treatments they received during their cancer treatment, who their care team was, and what expected late-stream effects they may experience from their cancer treatment.
Because getting to that 5-year survivor mark can be a harrowing journey for women, can't it?
Absolutely. And that's about the duration that we recommend following our breast cancer survivors. Every 6 months we see women and we follow them for at least 5 years. Part of the survivorship appointment is detailing what screening tests they need to do for their breasts. If they had breast conservative therapy, we want them still to do their mammograms every year. This is a unique area that we need to individualize our care because some breast cancer survivors, maybe mammograms not enough. Maybe they need to do mammogram plus an MRI if they have a genetic link to their cancer, or if they have a very strong family history where their relatives also had cancer. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they have increased breast density, so perhaps they need to participate with additional supplemental imaging like molecular breast imaging. We take it a layer deeper. We look at the prevention of breast cancer. Over 30% of breast cancers can be prevented by taking care of your body, eating right, maintaining your weight, exercise, avoiding alcohol. So we really take this opportunity as a springboard to what I like to say is offer women renewed vitality, make their life healthier than it ever was before.
Such timely advice. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so we are so pleased to welcome you to this program as a survivor and as a clinician. A pleasure to have you, Dr. Dawn Musalem. She's an oncologist with Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic. And as she pointed out, the survivorship program for patients there does go the full 5 years. That is pretty gratifying to hear. MayoClinic.org for more on that. Dr. Musalem, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
In a moment, it's called the crack attack, and it's what you need to know about your laptop. We'll tell you right after this.
1 minute after 5 in the morning.
The president of the World Bank is calling.
1 minute after noon.
New York City authorities are investigating a second deadly crane collapse.
1 minute after 5 in the evening.
The commander of the Joint African Union has said.
1 minute after 11 at night.
At least one tornado is reported to have touched down today.
What's happening? What's known? What's next? 1 minute after the hour, every hour, every day. From NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, many of President Trump's critics are hoping he does not serve his full term. But what kind of president would Mike Pence make? That's the question Jane Mayer sets out to answer in her New Yorker profile of Pence, titled The President Pence Delusion. She writes about his ties to the billionaire Koch brothers, who are the subject of her book, Dark Money. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
When it comes to education policy, Secretary Betsy DeVos often says,
I think that's an issue that's best left to the states.
But do states always do what's right for kids?
At the rate we're going, she's going to graduate from high school and not be able to read. This is wrong.
The fight for special ed in Texas on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, South Africa's forgotten jazz history with music by Abdullah Ibrahim.
The only reality is a dream, because everything that you see in reality started with a dream.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, there is a new computer attack we need to let you know about. It will render almost any Wi-Fi network connection out there completely unsecured and allow hackers to snoop on internet traffic. This is an unprecedented security flaw, they're calling it. It's called CRACK, for Key Reinstallation Attack. When installed on a laptop, a hacker can just basically listen in on your browsing. Our tech contributor Ray Hollister, former host of our Deemable Tech podcast, is here with new information on what you need to know to keep your cyber world secure. Hey, Ray.
Good morning.
And crack is whack.
There's so many good crack jokes
you can make, but none of them are really good. I know. I couldn't think of a better one. So this does sound concerning, though, actually. What is this?
Yeah, so basically it's a vulnerability that these researchers in Belgium discovered. So to make it simple, and I know I'm going to butcher this, so you IT guys who really know network stuff, leave me alone. It's fine. But basically, when you connect to a Wi-Fi network, your device shares the password, and the router says, okay, that's good. And then your device sends another key that says, okay, I'm going to use this for encryption now. And the router says, okay, cool. So the way crack works is a laptop or a device with crack installed will listen for that third key that goes back. And then it takes that and pretends to be that device. So basically, it just tunes in and starts listening to what you're transmitting across the network.
And this is a concern because?
Well, because anything that you're transmitting unsecured, like, you know, where you're accessing a website, maybe even sending emails if you're not doing it on a secured network, it can listen to it and gather that information. So it's not as big a concern of like your banking information, because usually that's on a secure website, so that's already encrypted. But what it could do is you could go to a website and it could add something to that website that would automatically download malware that would then grab your information when you're on the banking website and send it to hackers.
Now, according to what I'm seeing, Apple, Android, and Windows software, all susceptible to this crack vulnerability.
Basically, everybody that connects to the Wi-Fi could be susceptible to it. The good news is the researchers let those companies know back as far as 2016. So they've had the opportunity to start working on this. So actually, Apple has pushed out information for iOS in the new iOS 11. Microsoft has pushed out updates for Windows all the way back to Windows 7. So if you're running XP or Vista, you already should be off of that anyways, but now is definitely the time to get off of it.
Just fixing, changing your password, Ray, that's not going to get it. That's not going to fix this for people.
For the first time, you don't have to change your password.
Really? You're the guy who every time I see you, you say,
change your password.
Change your password.
Use the password encryption.
I think of you as Ray, change your password Hollister. That's how I see you. That's how I know you.
I mean, any opportunity I get to tell people, use a encrypted database like LastPass or Dashlane to store your passwords and use complicated
passwords.
You've
always counseled me to change my password to some 27,000-character thing that I can't remember.
that's the safest thing. Right.
Yeah, right. But this is not what to do now.
No, it's kind of like changing your keys. If there was a flaw in your lock that you could just stick a push pin into it and unlock it, well, you can change your keys all you want to. The flaw is still there. So the most important thing is to update your devices. Any security updates that come from Windows or Microsoft or Android, make sure to go ahead and push those and run those updates.
So that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Anything else?
The problem is the big companies, the big operating systems, they're taking care of this, but it's all the little devices that we have now. I'm a big proponent of Internet of Things. I love my Nest thermostat. I love all of my Wink devices and home automation. The problem is those devices don't get updated that often. So we're really going to have to pressure the manufacturers to say, you have to update these devices, and routers too. They don't get updated that often. Mm-hmm. So we have to get those companies to push these updates and fix it.
Going beyond this most recent hack, this is just one more sort of concern that we all have about the lack of security in today's world, whether it's the Equifax breach, whether it's crack, whether it's NSA snooping in our business.
Yeah.
If you're engaging with the digital world, you are, in effect, not secure. That is simply the reality today, and it's one that so many of us just uncomfortably have to navigate, and so there's really no solution to that.
You know, I was talking to David Luckin about that before the show. It's like you have to practically go off the grid to not be at risk of something. But ultimately, even if you just send a check in the mail, you're still at risk of identity theft just from that. And something about crack that's important for folks to know is no one can get you over the internet with this. They have to physically be within proximity of your Wi-Fi. So you don't have to worry about someone in Russia or in China, you know, attacking your network and grabbing your stuff. you have to be worried about the weird van that's driving around the neighborhood. So, but as long as you
and
don't
we need
see
to worry
it,
about that for some other reasons.
Well, yeah,
too.
Exactly.
So, bottom line, if you're at a coffee shop today and you get onto the Wi-Fi, should you be concerned?
Yes. I mean, you should always be concerned whenever you're using free Wi-Fi because that can always be listened to. But you want to make sure that there's something called a VPN, which I've never actually talked about on your show, which creates a virtual private network. It creates another layer of encryption. So it's like if we were talking in code, your listeners could hear us, but they wouldn't know what we're talking about. So when you're talking on the bank's website, it's encrypted. And if you're on a VPN, it's encrypted again. So even though it's publicly accessible and everyone can listen to it, you have to figure out those codes before you can actually understand what's being said.
Interesting, as always, to speak with you. Thanks for dropping in and letting our listeners know about this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Former tech contributor and Deemable Tech podcast host Ray Hollister. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us there or on iTunes. Also, our rebroadcast is tonight at 8. Next on 1A, a look at what exactly a drug czar does. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.